This is 101.9
Chai FM.
Welcome back in your element with Nikki Seberini. Self-esteem engineer Bev Malun is in the studio. We are taking your calls. If you do call us during this part of the show, we take your calls before we take the SMSs. So you can call us on 0861 24 24 36 or SMS 34519. So Bev, just before you left, the father sent through an SMS. His name is Trevor. I hope he's listening, because we did say, Trevor, this is what we're going to do first next week. And Trevor was born on the 9th of May, 1964. His wife, we don't know her name, the 12th of January, 1966. And there are two daughters, the 21st of January, 1994 and the 2nd of January 1997. And it was just asking about the daughters and relationships, and it's quite complex working on a whole family.
Yes, but it was fantastic. Good. I love doing this. And when I do it with families,
the best.
And they start to understand each other, like, oh, no wonder you are. Okay,
well, I know of a few people who have come to you.
Yes.
And it was like you turned on the light for them.
Yeah, which is so fantastic, yeah. Isn't it? To be able to have that light shining. Mm-hmm. It's such a privilege. So,
for sure.
Okay, so let's look at this, because honestly, we could spend hours. You know, I can profile one person in an hour. And when I do sessions privately, that's what I would do, is one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we go into such depth of what, and it's reflective. So it's like, does this happen? Doesn't that? This is why. And, oh, really? Well, wow. And what about this? But when you do a couple, so that's even more intense. And a whole family, normally done in 2 or 3 hours, is, you know, so we're going to do that. I'm just putting it in context.
Okay.
We would normally do this in 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, this would take, okay.
Right, and it's quite an investment for a family, but like you say, it puts the lights on, it changes their dynamic forever,
mm-hmm.
and it's an investment in their whole future relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So cheap at the price, but it takes time.
Okay.
Okay, and money, so I guess. So the truth is with this family, wow. So their daughters, when they pitch together against the parents, must drive the parents insane. I can just see it because the parents are so, as a couple, they are so driven and determined and such perfectionists, and everything has to be a certain way, and they want to lead the way, and they're quite particular about how they want things and etc., but loving and affectionate and warm, and there's a lot of lovely childlike, enthusiastic, fun spirited stuff there, but a mm-hmm. lot of drive.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of drive.
Yeah.
Put their daughters into the mix as a couple. Their daughters team up, and you've got this team of girls who, when they're driven, my goodness, could achieve anything,
mm-hmm.
anything as a team against their parents. But when they're not, oh my goodness, it's like hit the ball, drag Harry. The parents will be like, we need to get going. Oh, we're just getting ready. There won't be that
which
natural,
of course,
boom,
goes
boom,
against
boom.
The parents' want and drive and desire.
They're natural, yeah.
Yeah,
they're
to
natural.
Achieve and achieve.
Now, interestingly enough, the father on his own, if he had to step out of the mix of being in the couple, right, and he addresses the daughters, he could relate to them very well, because him on his own, he is a man who is driven very much by inspiration. He is driven when he finds something he's excited about. He can be volatile and it can be spontaneous. And so you have somebody who can go, well, that looks like a good idea. Let's go do that, mm-hmm. right? Whereas the wife, it takes a little bit longer to turn the ship. A little bit longer. The rudders might be a bit small for the size of the ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a powerful woman, and you can't just suddenly turn around and tell her she's doing something else, because if she has her head set in something, then she's going to get quite irritated about you messing with her schedule.
And husband spontaneous.
He can be incredibly spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he's a deep-thinking, philosophical, sensitive guy, and there's a lot to him. The two of them, when they met, that must have been karmic international, you know? This affectionate get-together of two people who just go, wow, we've been together before, and we've seen this a lot of times. So when they have the first daughter in 1994 and they bring her into the family, we'll just quickly jot her into the family here, and I think I got the math right, so that's not a bad thing either. And she brought to the family this drama, this new story, this new way for them to be. And it would be, because they so contained all by themselves, that couple, I must tell you.
Mm.
They're quite happy to be on their own. So I'm not saying they want to be rid of their children.
Mm.
But when you meet people, and I've profiled lots of families like this, and parents who are doing their absolute best to do their best by their kids, but the truth is they were so happily contained on their own. Such a wonderful, in love, connected, passionate, and seriously committed couple, that they were just fine by themselves. But society tells us, and our intrinsic DNA tell us, and we get the message that we need to procreate and bring family into it. And so I think sometimes people do that too soon. Mm. And obviously from a religious perspective, for those people out there who are religious and observant of whatever religion they follow, the goal is to procreate and continue the religion and bring family into it as soon as possible. In a secular environment, people have more choice that they give themselves. They afford themselves a privilege of more choice. And I still feel that they pressure themselves to become family very quickly. And sometimes there's regret. Sometimes there's a little bit of I wish I hadn't rushed it so much. Because the moment, and I said it in my book, and I say it all the time to anyone who wants to listen, is that the moment you push out that first child, you go from selfish to selfless in one push, and it's done. From then on, there's not a conversation, not a consideration, not a holiday, not a movie, not a thing you could do without considering the welfare of this other being that you've brought, played a role in bringing into the world. Mm-hmm. Now you add two to that, another one, three, four, and you've got a whole football team to consider the wherewithal of, right? Mm-hmm. So for them, I imagine that that was what they might have experienced, because there's this wonderful play in this relationship of them doing things together and being very connected, etc. And then bring this child into the world and the whole story changes. And it could have changed for the absolute better, but there's no question the story
would
changes.
Would bring a big change.
Absolutely. And then it has to work on keeping the family unit connected and together. And then along comes the next daughter, and we add her into the family. And I'm rushing through this as much as I can mathematically.
You're doing marvelously, Bev.
Yes, this looks like long division, doesn't it? If you look at this page, look at that.
Rather you than me, darling.
It's all right. I think I've got all the numbers in a row. So then we bring this next daughter in, and this family becomes a solid force. This is a solid force, but it has a tendency towards passivity. Isn't that interesting? It's such an interesting paradox. So you've got this family that can go out and change the world, literally, as a family. If they were a family of missionaries, wow, what they could do with this particular profile as a family would be unbelievable. But there is a lot of inflexibility, and there's a lot of sensitivity. And so unspoken sensitivities cannot be outrun. And that's one of my favorite lines. And I have to explain it, obviously, but once you get it, you'll know it makes perfect sense. Unspoken sensitivity cannot be outrun, because you can pretend to not share what you really want, feel, or need with somebody, and you can try and smooth it over and try and pretend it's not there, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll just carry on, but I'm not having my needs met. I'm not feeling like my voice is heard. I'm not sharing my deepest thoughts here. But okay, we'll just pretend that it's okay, and we'll keep moving. You can't outrun unspoken sensitivity. If I am sensitive about something and I do not voice it, it will catch up. It becomes a cancer. It doesn't just become the pink elephant in the corner of the room that everyone wants to ignore. Mm-hmm. It's like, are we going to talk about that thing? What thing? That thing that's taking up half the lounge. It's a big pink elephant, right? Or it's a mound under the carpet. You know that old saying of, we all just sweeping under the carpet, right? Well, I always like to say, yes, but you sweep enough stuff under the carpet, you're going to trip over the mound. Mm. At some point, you have to know that it is going to come up and slap you in the face, or in the family, or in the communication, or in the relationship, because you cannot outrun unspoken sensitivity. It will catch up with you. Somewhere it becomes a tiny resentment that grows and grows and grows, because now you or the family dynamic or whatever is the reason I am not having my needs met. There will be a resentment at some point. So sometimes people look at the people in the world who are doing the kind of thing I'm doing and sharing, I suppose, a wisdom or different knowledge or different ideas. And there's a resentment towards people like us, because in a relationship where there is unspoken sensitivity and unmet need, when one partner, one person in that family or somebody hears it and it goes, cling, really? I don't have to stay signed up for this. I don't have to accept it. I can voice my need. Mm. And they go back into that dynamic and they say, you know, I heard something made a lot of sense to me. And here's what my needs are. You're not meeting them. So this relationship, unless it changes, is actually not working for me. And it's like, well, where did you hear that? Where did this come into it?
It's threatening.
It's very threatening. Mm. It's very threatening. It's almost as dangerous sometimes as being involved in a love triangle. Just stay out of it.
Yeah.
Right. But we want people to grow. And what we'd rather have is the other person go, well, what did you hear? What made sense? And in our ideal world, they'd say, I endeavor to be greater. Bring that. Can I visit with that kind of information too? And let me think about it, because we want to stay together. And if we can remove the cancer from our relationship, well, how fantastic.
It's so unrealistic to think that people can stay in a relationship without change happening and growth. And, you know, that's the challenge within a relationship. Because we all change. You're not the same person you were 10 years ago. I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago.
I'm not the same person I was yesterday.
There we go. So, you know, we've got to be open to that. And we should find, we should be happy if our partner is able to find self and grow. And because that's, then the relationship grows. But I do understand that it would be very threatening.
It's incredibly
because it's
threatening.
Bringing about a change, and some people are very comfortable in that paradigm.
I agree, and I think that people are only happy if it's going to change the partner, if they see a need for their partner to change.
To change, exactly.
And they are already working on themselves. Mm-hmm. But when you're not working on yourself and you don't want to work and you're standing on the pedestal of I am fine and it's you who's the problem, then when that you goes and changes and improves and looks back and says about that pedestal, it's not looking so hot from where I'm standing, then I'm now obligated to do some internal work. And if I don't want to, then the relationship ceases to be. And I've counseled many couples who are on the verge of divorce, and many of them, gratefully, have managed to work through that and stay together, but some haven't. And that's also fine. In a world where we have permission to have made a mistake and begin again and give somebody else the opportunity to have a better life with the ex or whatever, and for me to have a better opportunity with somebody else, we have permission to have messed up. We are not in a society in which you're not allowed to do that because you face death. Well, you know, some people are in that society, but I doubt they're listening to this radio station. And the truth is that where we have permission to have messed up, the goal is not to just go, oh, well, I messed up, goodbye. It's to give it something. It's to give it your best. But if you really can't get out of it that which is fulfilling, or at least mostly fulfilling, or somewhat fulfilling enough to stay and justify staying, then we have permission to begin again. And we need to all live with that. I mess up all the time, and I can apologize, and I can say, I'm sorry, and let's begin again. Let's just try that. I'll try not to do that again. And so that's an important thing here. So when we look at this family dynamic, and we have this wonderful connected couple who are only too happy to have themselves and have each other, and we bring the whole family together, the family has got more and more powerful, more and more solid when they are together as a family and sharing what is going on inside their lives and inside their hearts. They have a wonderful family dynamic. When this family is not sharing and keeping clear without insecurity those things that are unmet needs, did that make sense? When this family is not sharing the unmet need, asking for clarification, asking to be heard, asking to share the secrets
within
the family
dynamic, yes,
then it will tend to a passivity and a depressive state that will be very hard to live within, because you have four different but strong personalities. And just because somebody isn't loud does not mean that they're not strong. And just because somebody is loud does not mean that they are strong. The strength I'm talking about is the strength to hear the unmet need without reacting poorly, without falling apart, without attacking, without withdrawing. That strength is when you can come to me and say, Bev, what happened yesterday was really hurtful for me, and this is why, and I was really hoping for more from you. And I can sit there and go, I'm sorry that I disappointed you. It's obviously not comfortable for me to hear that. And I hear it from where you're coming, and I'm going to do my best to do better, because the relationship means something to me, and I want to keep giving to it and building in it. That's where this relationship with this family particularly will thrive, where there's an openness and an unafraid approach to what comes out, and a non-reactional approach, non-judgmental. And from these parents with this penchant for perfection, I just want to put it out there that as a couple, they tend towards wanting perfection. and direction and etc. And with children who are driven by inspiration and a team who want to feel inspired and feel recognized and feel respected and affirmed, be careful.
Well, I hope that Trevor was listening because we've spent a great deal of time on that. I hope that had a great great insight and great meaning for you, Trevor, and your family. Let's take a break. After the break, Bev, we're looking at the 18th of the 9th, 1962.
101.9 IFM. 101.9 megahertz of power.
Good morning. Self-esteem engineer Bev Malun is in the studio. We're taking your calls on 0861 24 24 36, or you can SMS your birthday to 34519. Also, just a reminder that I have a double set of tickets to give away to the Yaakov Shweki concert. And if you would like to win those tickets, go to our website, chaifm.com, learn the words, get into the whole melody behind the song on the website, because round about 11 o'clock, I'm going to be, I'm going to be taking your calls, and hopefully you're going to be singing for your tickets. So, Bev, we're looking at the 18th of the 9th, 1962.
Not an easy person to be. If you do the numbers, this is, you know, and it's not the same for every person who comes up with these numbers. Mm-hmm. So let's just put that out there right okay. now, because there is a certain place in the energy of these numbers that this person comes out there, for whatever reason I'm getting a perspective on.
Okay.
But this person is a 9999. Right. So okay. one would look and go, wow, a complete person. He must feel so whole. But the people who I've mentored over the years, I can't tell you that they feel whole. I can't tell you that they feel completely inspired all the time. In fact, what they battle is direction. What they battle is feeling okay within themselves a lot of the time. Mm. So if this person was raised in the most beautiful, affirming, affectionate, respectful, honoring way, and I'm not certain that that's entirely likely in the 60s, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, there was the 60s moving into the 70s. This person was a teenager in the 70s. That is right smack bam in Woodstock, you know, that's that whole thing. But I don't know where in the world this person grew up. I don't know what the dynamics of the place were, what the energy of the country was that they were in. But if it is a South African person, let's say, born South African, been South African, then you're looking at someone who is growing up in a world that was not even 20 years from World War II. There was a huge amount of immigration in this country. There was a lot of things going on. And the parents of that generation were generally born just before the war started, in the late 30s, mm-hmm. etc. Mm-hmm. And so these were people who either watched or listened to or grew up while there was a massive war on. That was horrific. Those were not the easiest parents to be raised by. So the people born, you know, these baby boomers, and this person's just shy of baby booming because there was the 46 to 64 was actually the baby booming era. So this is just near the end of that. This person would have needed a huge amount of affirmation and respect and encouragement so that they could reach their full potential, because this is someone who would be good at anything they try. That's not an easy way to be in the world.
Mm.
And if you're too scared to try anything, then you can never find your potential. How do you find if you're just too scared?
Yeah.
So with that kind of personality, there's a lot of volatility here. There's a lot of spontaneity. There's naivety thrown in there. There's a potential for this person to be hurt and trust the wrong people unless they're guarded well. There's a lot of need for this person to have learned the correct boundaries to put around things, the correct disciplines to have in their life, so that he or she, and I'm getting she, so I'm not sure, but we'll just go with she because it's easier for me, so that she would have had to manage in her world. She'd have to manage herself. She'd have to manage her distractions, her disciplines, her need for affirmation and respect. Remember, my byline is, you know, try and live independent of the scrutiny of others. And if you're living your life determinedly not to hurt anyone else, on purpose trying to do things within the law and doing things that feel good for you and that you believe will be good for those whom it affects, then you should be able to live independent of the scrutiny of mm-hmm. others, because then people will have opinions, but you don't have to be looking over your shoulder worrying that someone will say, oh, I caught you, you stole this, or I caught you, you did this wrong, or I found out that you were talking about me behind my, you know, if the person's living with integrity and a wholeness that denotes that and a self-discipline that encourages that, then there's no reason not to put yourself out there. to do the things that you're good at, to pursue the things that you're good at, because people will have opinions. Provided you know you're doing things within reason and within those confines, then you're free. You know, the first thing that children do when you give them a ball, you give 12 boys a ball, or even 4 boys, just give them a ball to play with. And what do? Within a few minutes, there's rules. So you think children want complete freedom and unboundaried, undisciplined playtime? Forget it. They want to, what are the rules? You come onto the field and you say, all right, here's this, here's that, here's a ball, here's an obstacle. Okay, what are the rules? Where do we play till? Mm-hmm. That's the first question. Because why? Inside the boundaries of the discipline of where they can go to, they are free. They are free.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what happened last night. You have to run in your lane. When you run out of your lane, you create havoc. Mm-hmm. But in your lane, you are free to be absolutely the best you can be. But don't be stepping out of your lane, because you're going to disqualify your team and hurt other people potentially. You can't do that. Don't do the long jump and step half a centimeter over that yellow line. You're out. You did the best jump in the world. Doesn't count. It counts when you're in the line. That's the bottom line. Within the confines of discipline and the healthy boundaries we set for ourselves to succeed, we are free to be the best we can be. Without those choices, without those boundaries and disciplines, it's not possible to reach that highest potential. Usain Bolt might be fantastic. Let's feed him pizza for a week and see what happens to that speed. There is a discipline. Do you know what I'm saying?
I hear you. Sorry. Okay.
No, I hear you. Come from left field, Nikki?
food. Sorry, I get distracted. Food.
We'll talk about something else. So you go outside of the discipline of that which ensures you'll thrive, that which ensures you will do your best, and never mind the opinions of others, you won't succeed. So for this person to have the best opportunity to have thrived and to be succeeding in her life, she will need to set boundaries, to define boundaries, and to stay within them and thereby succeed. Mm-hmm. To determine a focus, determine a path, and stay on it and thereby succeed. To assess people, because this is an unbelievable forensic mind. Can she get to the bottom of anything? You can say one thing, say, I know what you really mean. There's a unbelievable mind here, but can you use that mind to serve yourself a good helping of opportunity and the willingness to succeed and the willingness to take risks? Or do you use that mind to determine what people are thinking before they've said a thing and hold yourself back for the fear of what will come out of it? It's a big question.
We're going to take a break, and then we're going to look at Priyan Arumugam. Let me give you Priyan's dates, Bev. The 20th of the 8th, 1983, and I have some feedback from Trevor. Lovely to hear from you, Trevor. Trevor said, hi, Nikki and Bev. This is Trevor, and I was most definitely listening. Thank you, Bev, for putting in so much effort for us today. I really appreciate it. Bev, you are spot on. Wish you all a good Shabbos. Kind regards, Trevor.
Great, Trevor.
Thank you, Trevor, for the feedback.
I think you should have a family powwow that like has everyone sitting on their hands. Do with this as you wish, but this would be my best wish for your family, because there's a lot of air to clear there, I know. I can see in the dynamics. And have a family powwow where there's no judgment, no scrutiny. There's no, not even encouragement. There's not affirmation. There's nothing but hearing. Nothing but hearing in a loving, safe space where you can pretend to have a mentor there or a mediator who holds it together, and that only in the spirit of wanting the family to be healthier and better and closer and reaching its higher potential, which is phenomenal, you open up and share the unmet needs. Where do you feel your needs have been met? Where do you feel they haven't? What do you want? What do you not want? What do you prefer? No judgment. No, you did this. No, this is what I feel. And these are all old enough. These are teenagers. You know, you want to connect with teenagers, but if you don't connect with them in a spirit of non-judgment, you don't stand a chance.
Sure.
Because we all know what we went through as teenagers. Everyone is trying to, you finally feel strong enough to do stuff, but you're not safe enough to do it. So it's a paradox.
Strong enough to do stuff, but not safe enough. I love that.
But that is what a teenager goes through, isn't it? You know, they finally can push the boundaries, but they're too scared to push them too far. And if they do push them too far and get in trouble, they better have safe arms to fall back into in their parent body or their home body. They better, because otherwise they'll fall into someone else's arms. And that's the last thing you want with your children.
Let's take a break. Thanks, Trevor, for the feedback. And Priyan, I hope you're listening. We're going to be looking at your birth date after the break. 5 minutes past 10 o'clock. Good morning. You're with Nikki Seberini in Your Element. And we have self-esteem engineer Bev Malun in the studio looking at your numbers. So, Bev, Priyan's birth date, the 20th of the 8th, 1983.
Right. So, Priyan, the uber nurturer. That's Priyan.
Uber nurturer.
Yeah. And I'll bet if she's sitting and listening, she just laughed because that's what she is. She's a directive force of nature. She wants to heal, bathe, cleanse, and take care of the world. So, mm-hmm. so
I love this, those people.
Yeah, they're lovely, mm-hmm. especially if you can just put them in your world and say, okay, here's everything that needs doing. And I need your help. You need those words. I
but
need
is it
your
good
help.
For her? This is the question.
So you see, you know,
Priyan,
me too
are
well
you
now.
Satisfied?
There you go. Okay, you do the rest of Priyan. Here's the numbers. Go for it. I know you'll do a better job. Do it, Nikki. You are the oracle of the show anyway. So exactly. That's exactly it. Are you meeting your needs? Are you in your story? Are you living a life that is fulfilling? Are your relationships fulfilling? I always like to ask people the question, how's it working for you? So you're running around and you're healing, bathing, saving, trying to fix in your children's lives, probably under their skin a lot of the time. You're just trying to help. That's your favorite line, but I was just trying to help. I know you just want to help. She is the ultimate Uber helper, and she's such a directive force. But there's a story there. There's something that Priyan wants. There's something that she wishes for herself. There's something that she would like. There's a way she sees the world around her, and I'm not certain it will have unfolded that way just yet. Not yet, because there's a lot of change happening for her. And this is a good year in which for that to happen. This is a good year for her personally to bring things together, to bring relationships together, etc. What I'm going to encourage her to look at on one foot is how you nurture others and how you nurture you. What are the boundaries you put in? Where do you push yourself too far and sublimate your needs just to help others? And are you nurturing to a point where people are being smothered? Because that is a big concern here. You're such a natural nurturer. Do you save people before they need to be getting up?
Good question.
It's a very big question. You know, I'm not convinced that Derek Redmond's father would have run onto the track to help his son finish the race if his son didn't get up. I think if he didn't get up, and he was injured and hurt, and they brought on the stretchers, and he ripped that hamstring to shreds. And they brought on the stretchers, and they carried him off. He would have met him off the track. But that boy got up, and he found something inside of him that said, I didn't train this hard to not finish this. I don't care what pain it is. He was screaming by the end of that race. You could see he was in agony. And then come in to help and support and to help him finish. He didn't come in and say, come on, boy, you have to finish the race. I'll help you. This is what you need.
Yeah.
He showed what his need was, and then he got the support. So that's a big example, right? And for anyone who has not seen that clip, go onto YouTube and just put in Derek Redmond Olympics, and you'll see it. I mean, it's heart-wrenching, but it's so inspiring. And I was listening to you on the way here talking about how overcoming adversity, it inspires you. But that is such an example. For you, Priyan, this is the question I want you to put to yourself. Am I helping before people ask for help? Am I helping before people even have a direction? Am I giving the direction? Am I leading the way for people's recovery, for their just solutions in simple everyday life for my children? Because if we don't stretch ourselves as human beings, we don't develop the capacity to overcome adversity ourselves. Whatever Derek Redmond's story was before that moment, he was a man capable of overcoming adversity. He had been through the mill and he had stretched himself, because otherwise he would have broken into 1,000 pieces in that moment and he would not have moved. I'm in too much pain. I can't get through the pain. But the picture was bigger for him. And even in the pain, he could say, even with this pain, I will finish this race. I will not win it. They will be doing their victory lap and lap me, but I will finish this race because this is what I'm about. Not starting, finishing. I'm about the process right now. If we don't stretch ourselves enough, how are we going to figure that out? And for Priyan, when you're going to become a mother, if you're a mother already, she may very well be, and if you're not yet, when you do become one, gently with how much you help. Gently. I had to learn this myself, so I can speak from full perspective here. When my son and I were in that hijacking, he was 8 months old. He was beaten up and thrown out of a moving car at 8 months old. The first talks I ever did and still get invited to do on overcoming adversity, choosing to be better and not bitter, how to move through the pain, what lessons can come from adversity, how can we learn and grow, etc. I love doing that talk. I love how it touches and moves people because that's what changed me. That re-shook up my world and forced me to redefine myself because I no longer existed. The Beverly that got hit by a car 4 times to try and save my son and then managed to get in the car and was also beaten up and thrown out of a moving car was a very different human being to the one that had just driven home with her 8-month-old baby to put him to bed. There was no semblance of the same person, and so to fit into that expanded being, I had to redefine myself. But if I didn't go through that adversity and I didn't stretch, there's no one who could have helped me. There's no one who could have healed and saved and made me feel no one. So what I'm saying to Priyan is I've had to learn to let my son get hurt and then help him develop the skills it takes to get through that. I've had to watch him be snubbed or disappointed or let down and then not go rushing in too soon. It's hard, but let him go through it and come to me and help him rebuild and help him develop. I've had to let him be scared of things and not push him and say, you'll be fine, I'll be right there. No, you've got to go do it yourself so that he could become the kind of person, even at 12, who can go and try new things with trepidation, with fear, but knowing I will survive this. This will stretch me, but I will survive this. It's like I've always said to him, the rides at Gold Reef City or at any theme park, they're not designed to kill you. They're designed to thrill you. And it's the experience, that exhilaration of feeling like you come close to annihilation that is so endorphin-filled and stretches you and you feel bigger afterwards. It's the same in life as going up to a group of girls that you want to interact with and letting your daughter go. Let her go. Let her be hurt. Let her be rejected. Let her be disappointed because there is, and let her be accepted alternatively. Let her be received. Let her risk. That's the real thing I'm saying. Let the people in your life risk and then come pick up the pieces when they turn to you for support.
Wow, Bev, thank you. That Priyan, also hope that that had great meaning for you. Well, unfortunately, we're not going to have time to take on any more. So for all those SMSs that have come through this morning that Bev has not been able to look at, you know how it works. Bev will be back in the studio 9:30 next Friday, and Bev will be working on your numbers. So Bev, have a good weekend.
Thank you, you too.
You've been enjoying the Olympics.
I have been. Unbelievably inspiring. Very excited for tomorrow night, Castor-Semenya. Are we not just going to...
So excited.
If someone can pull anything out of that, they're going to have jet fuel to beat her, aren't they?
Come on, Castor. So I just don't want to be too confident.
I felt for our javelin.
I know.
I really did. I felt for our 400-meter relay, but on appeal, we're in again, so that's fantastic.
Yes, we're in the final, which is marvelous.
Which is marvelous because we don't know that we would have made the final.
Exactly.
That may very well be God's hand, just edging us along into the final.
Oh, but it's
isn't
wonderful.
Isn't it interesting? And can I end on this?
Do I
have a moment?
You have a moment.
Thank you. That Oscar Pistorius, who had such a dream to compete, who has redefined humanity's struggle, who has redefined overcoming adversity, who has told us that with very little to offer the world, you can stand up on blades and run with those who have calves, knees, ankles, and feet, right? And his dream was not to get to the final. I've listened to his interviews. He just wanted to make the semi, and he made it. He made it. How phenomenal for him. But inside the unspoken dream, he really wanted to get to a final.
Yeah.
And isn't this just a gentle way
of
God saying, you know what? You know what? You wouldn't have made the final. It just is what it is. Knees, ankles, calves and feet, they do seem to make a difference. And that's why I think they gave him permission to run, because he did not outstrip the people who are equipped with human condition, right from top to toe. And I think that this is the most beautiful, gentle way of just acknowledging the gratitude that humanity should have to this man who has literally lifted up the planet. He has changed the planet in such a significant way that we can see ourselves differently. We can see each other differently, with more humanity, with more spirit. And he has been given an opportunity to run in the Olympic final. I think it's exquisite.
They've so beautifully put, as always. Thank you, Miss Malone.
Thank you, ma'am.